Hello, my name is Steve Wiggins, and I am presenting a podcast today about the Philistines and their fish god Dagon. That's the way the Bible presents the story, the Philistines and their fish god. But what we really know about Dagon is a lot more interesting than that. Let me give you a little background first. Dagon is a deity that is known to have been one of the major gods of ancient Mesopotamia. Having said that, when I started to look at Dagon a number of years ago, I actually wanted to write my dissertation on Dagon. And when I started out to do that at Edinburgh University back in the year 1990, my advisor said, "That's a bad idea. There is not enough information available. You simply have to choose another topic." And so I did. Of course, within 5 years, somebody had written a dissertation on Dagon, and now we know all kinds of things that we didn't know before. But at that time, it seemed, even in the early 90s, that we knew very little about this god, and we still know very little about him. The main source of information about Dagon up until about the 1870s was the Bible itself, and there's a nice little story in the Book of Samuel, which talks about how the Israelites were going out to battle against the Philistines, and when they went to war, the Israelites lost. Now, the way that people went to war in the ancient world is they often took their gods with them. It was a way of demoralizing the enemy. I mean, if you have your god with you, they're going to be upset. Oh my gosh, they've got a god in their camp. You know, what are we going to do? And so the Philistines are terrified because they see the Ark of the Covenant in the Israelite camp. As the battle turns out, the Philistines end up winning, and they capture the Ark of the Covenant. And they take it back to their temple, and the Bible says it's the temple of Dagon. And when the Ark is there, the story unfolds that the two gods are sort of duking it out while the Ark is held captive. Yahweh, the God of Israel, fighting against Dagon, the God of the Philistines, in a kind of naturalized way. Basically, what happens is the statue of Dagon in the temple ends up falling down in front of the Ark, kind of like it's worshiping Yahweh. And the priests of Dagon come in, they find it that way, they set it back up into its place, and then the next morning when they come in, the statue's fallen over again, but this time its head and its hands are broken off. And after that happens, the Bible says all that was left to Dagon was his fishy part. And so everybody assumes that because of the way this was interpreted in the Bible, that Dagon must have been a fish god. It became so popular of an idea that a few years ago, a Spanish film director, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, produced a movie on, or directed a movie, I guess, on Dagon. It's a horror movie, and it's one of the very few that I can't actually watch the whole way through because there's some pretty gruesome stuff in it. But the idea is based on Dagon as a fish god. It's a purely biblical idea. Now, what we really do know about Dagon, as far as the most recent information that I've had access to, is that he was a major storm deity of some sort. Now, I hesitate to say he was a storm deity because the first thing that comes to somebody's mind is that he is somehow a personified god of the storm or something like that. Gods in the ancient world were actually much more complex characters than all of that. They were beings that had control over certain parts of nature, but their control was actually much more than simply being in charge of the storm, or being in charge of the moon, or being in charge of the sun. They were conceived of as being a people, if you will, on a large scale. And so maybe one of their interests might have been the control of the weather, or the control of the waters, or the control of the sun. But that was only part of what they did. And so when we think of a god as a storm god, we tend to think, oh, he's only concerned with thunder and lightning and rain. No, that's not true. The god's actually concerned with, you know, everyday life for gods, which includes interactions with other gods, sexual relationships, power plays, kingship bids, all sorts of things. What you'd expect to find in the human world also occurred in the divine world. Now, as long as you're willing to work with that idea, you can see that Dagon was a storm god. He was in charge of the weather. This seems to have been the case throughout much of Mesopotamia. I mean, if you go along the great cities of the river valleys of the Tigris and Euphrates, you find that many of these cities had as their chief god something that's very similar to Dagon, or somebody who is very similar to Dagon. So he apparently, in its original form, was some sort of storm god. Now, how he got from storm god to fish god is anybody's guess. We don't really know what happened. Now, we can get into some convoluted kinds of linguistic suggestions about what might have happened with Dagon and how he ended up being a fish god in popular understanding. But I think the basic idea is that the word for fish in the Hebrew text is also very similar to, if not, I can't recall off the top of my head, if not actually identical to, the word for grain. In English, of course, they're very different words. They sound quite different. Grain, fish, doesn't have anything in common, or the two words don't have anything in common. In ancient languages, they're similar, especially in ancient Hebrew. So maybe what's going on is that Dagon was associated with grain. Now, as a god associated with grain, you can see a natural correlation between the weather and grain. I mean, if the weather is cooperative, then you have good crops, therefore you have a supply of grain. Weather has very little to do with fish. So it's probably more along the lines of Dagon being a god associated with grain that was misunderstood as a god associated with fish. And I really hesitate to let go of the idea of the fish god because it has such a rich afterlife, and it's one of those ideas that really picked up and ran after after the King James Version of the Bible sort of perpetuated the fish idea. And it happened in a number of ways. One is that there were discoveries made in the 1870s and later in Mesopotamia by archaeologists, and one of the things they found was a being, we're still not sure who this being is, but portrayed in various formats, like on cylinder seals and things like that, who has the upper torso of a human being and a tail of a fish. I mean, literally a merman sort of figure, except it has the old Assyrian kind of beard and the Assyrian kind of hat. So you have to picture this ugly mermaid, this merman who's got a big braided beard and funky hat. If you get that kind of picture in your head, you're getting close to what this character looks like. And this character is often labeled on the web. If you do a web search for Dagon, you'll find this character brought up all the time. There's no reason to suppose that this is Dagon. It's only because the King James Version of the Bible translates that one verse, Dagon's fishy part, that we have this association. Who it is, we don't know, but probably not Dagon. But because of the idea of the King James Version and their use of the word fish to associate with the god Dagon, we have this kind of idea that picks up in popular culture. And while I was teaching a few years ago at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, I was doing some research on Dagon for a course that I was working on. It was just a very brief mention of Dagon in the class, but a student asked about it, so I decided to do some research for them. And as I was looking up information, I discovered that there was a whole culture of Dagon available on the internet. And this is something that's really quite amazing if you stop to think about it, because now we've got a popular conception of Dagon that's based on this idea of a fish god, which probably has nothing to do with the reality in the ancient world, but it's become so popular that it has taken on a life of its own. So I tried to trace it. It started out because my wife actually bought me, as a kind of a gag gift when I was teaching the course, a bumper sticker which has the Jesus fish on it, but instead of having the word Jesus in it, the Jesus fish has the word Dagon in it. And the fish has these kind of tendrils coming off the front of it, as opposed to just being a plain Jesus fish. And the head of the department stopped by my office one day and said, "What's this? Why are these tendrils here?" And so I tried to explain the whole story of Dagon. He said, "Oh, I know that." He said, "But why are there tendrils here?" And I didn't know the answer, so I thought, well, I better do some research on that. So I looked up as much as I could about this particular icon, if you will, of Dagon, and I discovered that this goes back to a story by the kind of science fiction-y, quasi-horror writer H.P. Lovecraft. At this point in time, I had never heard of H.P. Lovecraft. I'd never read any of his work. But I discovered that he wrote a book, or a story, I should say, it's not really an entire book, called The Shadow Over Innsmouth. And the story is of a man who finds himself stranded in a New England town, Innsmouth. And while he is there, he starts running into these people who are part fish and part human, in various stages of devolution into the fish form. And as the story unfolds, he finds himself trapped there, and these creatures are after him. And the reason that they have turned into fish, or started to turn into fish, is because they worship Dagon, who is a god of the sea. And this is the basis for the movie I mentioned earlier. It's based on that story. And it's that story that gave the idea of Dagon as being a kind of tendrilled sea creature to whoever came up with the idea of the bumper sticker, and eventually became a very popular web presence. So if we can trace the idea back to the 1920s and H.P. Lovecraft's story, we can trace it forward from there into the movie Dagon, which was made, I believe, in the 1980s or 90s. This is a fairly recent movie. It may have even been in the early 2000s. I can't recall the exact date. But this idea has taken on such a life of its own that it seems a shame to go back and say, sorry to debunk all of this, but we actually have a grain god. I mean, you couldn't picture people turning into grain. I mean, it doesn't have the same terror element that that your fish god has. So the idea is one that is probably less exciting. The actual reality is less exciting than the idea that that evolved out of it over time. But Dagon probably had something to do with the storm culture, the agricultural cycle in the ancient world. And as time developed and people began to misunderstand that because of the translation of Hebrew, and when the King James Version was translated, which was in the 1600s, early 1600s no less, the understanding of the Hebrew language was pretty minimal. And obviously, there were still Jewish communities that used Hebrew and understood it, but the average Christian community in the 1600s was not terribly well informed about the original meanings of Hebrew words, and the King James Version, quite frankly, got a lot of things wrong. And so we've got this this tradition that started then and continued to live on. It took on a life of its own into popular culture, but it has misinformed us as to who Dagon probably really was. Now, having said all that, here we are still some 15, nearly 20 years since I first proposed to my advisor that I wanted to write on Dagon. And we really don't know a whole lot about this god. We keep on discovering new material as excavations continue in the Middle East and people find new material, textual and iconographic. We learn more about Dagon, but it really is a rather odd situation because here we have a major deity, obviously the chief deity of many of these cultures, and we know basically nothing about him. And it's one of the fortunes of archaeology where we know very little about a character that obviously was important to ancient people. In all likelihood, over time, we'll discover more about Dagon and figure out a bit more about who he really was. But at this point in time, it seems that he's quite different than the perception that you would get from doing a standard web search on the character.